Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Aramarte Feo, and we have a packed 90 minutes coming at you tonight. Shortly, our first guest, Allie Roberts, will be in, and we're going to talk about polyamory, which is making great strides forward right now. People are understanding more about it, but there's still a lot of people who have mistaken ideas, so we want to clear up some of that. And at the half hour, Sarit Jacobson will be here with viewing the world and with a particular emphasis on Palestine and Israel. At 60 minutes, Rick Smith and Bigfoot will be here. Rick will be talking about the tall man, Sasquatch, in this segment. So let's get right to it. Tomorrow, this time, actually before this time, we're going to know how the vote in Scotland goes, and I find this very exciting. I guess, I don't know, maybe because I have some Scots blood, but I've got Irish blood and English blood too. But this is the first time that Great Britain has, well, the UK, whatever, has agreed to let Scotland hold their own referendum. And the last I knew, it was really too close to call. It was something like maybe 49-51, could go either way, because a lot of Scot people do want their independence. So I think people around the world who also are leaning toward independence are keeping close eyes on this. So we will know in, well, like I said, less than 24 hours. I just find it very exciting. Anytime that people want and are doing something for their freedom, it's like, you know, they've got my vote. And before we come back next Wednesday, we will have celebrated, or not, depending on your own choices, the autumnal equinox, which is also called Maybon. And this is the time when the dark and the light are the same, for a very, very short time. And for a lot of people who celebrate earth religions, it's the second harvest, particularly in Wicca and a couple others. The first harvest is the beginning of August. The second is now. And the third is at Samhain, which is also called Halloween. So autumn, you know, it's we've been having here in Illinois autumn weather for, I guess, a couple of weeks. So it's been way ahead of time due to climate change, but it feels nice. It gets semi-warm in the daytime, but the nights are down to be 40, 45. And usually this doesn't happen here till mid to late October. But this year, like around the world, things are different. So, and I'm going to say it's not too late. You know, the planet does not have to go... humans don't have to go. We can still change things, but we have to change the system that we have allowed to be ruling us. But if you celebrate this equinox, have a blessed one. And if you aren't going out to do it, if you would like to join in, we have a ceremony on Tuesday night, which is equinox, on blogtalkradio.com/here-b-monsters. This is Gwendolyn Holden Berry Station, and we do occasionally do ceremonies on there to celebrate different things or for different things. So this coming Tuesday, it will be 7 o'clock Eastern. We will be celebrating. It's called The Ceremony, and you'll be able to find out more information as it gets closer on the Era Marte Fio Facebook page. Or my wall, or Gwen's wall. So keep an eye out for it. Or if you miss all of that, just PM me and I'll remind you when and where. So we hope to have you with us. We really enjoy doing these, and from what people tell us, they enjoy listening to them too and, taking part, because there at home with your computer, you can actually, get a little more involved maybe than just listening. But listening is good. I'm not knocking that. There's a couple Facebook pages I'd like to recommend for people who are green and wanting to be green. And there's a Facebook page called Environmental Working Group. And this is, it's very good. There's a lot of people in it, and a lot of topics are covered. So pretty much whatever cause you have as far as the environment and the climate, you will be able to find information there, other people to hook up with. So I highly recommend it. And also for people who are wanting to get more into the simple life, simple way of living, there is a Facebook page called Living with Less and Having More. And I also recommend that. I think anytime that we can share ideas on how to get so much clutter, whether that be material possessions, things in our mind, people, and when we can clear the actual clutter that isn't bringing us value out of our lives, there's so much space for us to just breathe and then to grow and bring in the things that we will value. And so this particular page will help with some hints and tips and things on how you can have more by living with less. And as regular listeners know, I'm always interested in doing that. And I found, I just have a regular size, it's a regular size house, but it's the top floor of a two flat. So I have several rooms and things, and I have things. And so I found some more clothes and jewelry and things that will be going bye-bye for people who will be able to use them and enjoy them. And it's just some of them, actually are things I really like, but I have like repeats, backups and things. And in most cases, we don't really need that many backups. So I'm still doing that. And there's a book I would also like to recommend, again, pretty highly. It's called House Thinking. It came out several years ago. It's by Winifred Gallagher. And she talks about how it works so much better when you think about the purpose of your house or the rooms in it, rather than just think, okay, because everybody, quote unquote, everybody has a living room, two bedrooms, three bedrooms, four baths, whatever. They've got the family room or the great room. Because everybody has it, that's what we have to have. And when you really sit down and think about how you spend your time in your shelter of choice, you may find that you don't need these particular things. I know I myself have changed what was supposed to be the living room into more, I'm calling it obrery, because it's sort of my office and library. And as many of you know, I have so many books and I keep weeding books out. But for me, that works because I have a dining room. And when I have people over, food is usually involved. And, so people sit around the dining room And then the people who stay, whatever, you know, we can wander off into the obrary. But it's not the a typical, like, living room, because I don't need that. Now, some people have a living room, but the main thing they do in there is watch TV. So, you know, if that's their thing, that's their thing. I got rid of my TV several years ago because that isn't my thing. And I like to talk with people. I like conversation. So that can be done quite well in a library, around the dining table. So, you know, you just think about the way you use your home. And do you really need all of those bedrooms as bedrooms? I mean, can you use one of them for an office? Can you use one for a workout room, an exercise room? Maybe you, if it's big enough or whatever, if you soundproof it or not, you might use it for band practice. You know, things that we can do, we don't have to just follow the crowd. And the same holds for, furniture. Because there was a time when the epitome of class was to have like a sofa, a love seat, a couple chairs that all matched, and you would have a coffee table and a couple end tables that all matched. This was like styling. Now we understand that just proves that you really don't think for yourself. So we don't recommend that. You know, pick furniture that you love. And if you love it, it will go together. It's funny how that works. But there again, that's part of simplifying, because you're going to find out that you don't need all of those pieces. So just rethink. And if you have a chance, check out this book, House Thinking, by Winifred Gallagher. You won't regret it. And now we have Allie Roberts. Hello, Allie.
Hello.
I have to say that, yes, this is not her real name, because there were a couple of reasons we didn't want to use her real name. Right, Allie? So
yes.
This is all good. And thanks for coming. I'm so sorry. We had you scheduled for last week. And between, you know, like hack/virus, I couldn't even get on and do anything, so we had to cancel. But I really appreciate you coming tonight.
It's technology. Isn't technology wonderful?
It is. It really is. And I try not to bitch about it too much, because it's so much better than not having it. So,
this is true.
You know, when you have your choices, yeah. But, you know, up until, well, I won't say that. A long time ago, I read something in an old Green Egg magazine. It was called the Condom, it was a Condom Agreement, the Condom something. And I was just like, what? These people are all together and they have sex all with each other. And then if they're going to go outside, they promise they're going to use condom. I mean, it blew my mind, because I had never heard of anything like this. Well, this turned out it was Morning Glory Zell and Oberon Zell, who were the people who coined the term polyamory. And this was back years and years ago. I read the article when it was old, so I don't know, but they spent their lives doing it. But now polyamory is, I don't know if it's on the rise or if people are just coming out of the closet, or actually they know what to call what they're doing now. What would your definition of it be, Allie?
For me personally, polyamory is being in a relationship with multiple people and loving each person as if they are your mate. because honestly, and to me, how can you, if you can, I know this is a bad example, but if you can love your husband or wife or whatever and your children, it's pretty much the same thing. You can always love more than one person, so why limit yourself to just being with one person?
I agree.
Because,
yeah,
because
go ahead.
If you, by putting limits on yourself, at some point in time, you're going to get bored. And we all know what being bored leads to.
Well, you know, the analogy is very good, I think, when people say, oh, you can only love one person at a time. And I say, well, you know, if you have more than one child, you love all your children. If you have brothers or sisters, your parents loved all of you. So why can't you romantically love more than one person? It seems like that was put on us by governments, religions, whatever, for purposes that had nothing to do with our happiness.
Honestly, from research that I have done and from my schooling, it seems that it is through Christianity. I mean, I'm not knocking Christianity because, hey, I'm actually pagan Roman Catholic. So I really can't say much because I am part Christian. But at the same time, Christians are the ones that want to put the, you can't have this. One man, one woman, you can't love this, you can't love that, you can't do this, you can't do that. You can't help what your heart feels.
Well, that's it. You can't dictate your heart and the feelings. And there's a lot of unhappy people because they've tried to. And I know that sometimes, and I'm sure you've met people who have surprised you because they hold to those the one-on-one. But yet, and I always say, well, you know, there's a cop in New York that I just tried to convert to this way of thinking, because he wouldn't go for it because he was more comfortable cheating.
Yeah,
and
because
then being in an open relationship, because I mean, since I've known him, you know, he's cheated on the people he was with, and but yet he didn't want to get into anything with me that would be open. He wanted evidently me to lie to him, and then he would lie to me. And
because a lot of time people fear what they don't understand.
I guess. And of course, jealousy comes in, and we're not saying that people still don't get jealous, but the best communicators in the world, I have found, are people who are poly.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say I don't get jealous, because I've been with my boyfriend for going on 6 years now,
mm-hmm.
and I still get jealous. But then
we
sit down and we have a conversation, and I explain how I feel, and he reassures me that, you know what, just because this is how it appears to you, this is not how it is, and then we work on it together to where, okay, the jealousy's gone again.
Yes, exactly.
It's all about communication.
Yeah, it's all about communication. It's, I don't know of any poly people who don't talk to each other and everybody, but I mean, who don't talk it through, because I don't think that they would remain poly very long. How did you first hear about it? Because I just said how I had first heard, and I was just like, oh my God, what are they talking about? Because I was back, you know, into that, sure, you promised them this and cheat and, you know, go on about your life. How did you first hear about poly, either the word or the actions, or how did you get involved?
Well, I was with an ex, and I myself am bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, being bisexual, you're going to want to act on your feelings if you have them for somebody else.
Sure.
So I really didn't have a name for it then. It's probably within like the last, 4 years that I finally found a name for it. I had just figured just being in a relationship. it wasn't until about 4 years ago, when I went on this website called FetLife, and where it's basically, they say it's polyamory is a lifestyle on its own, but that website includes it in the BDSM type context.
Right.
So that's
right.
How I first heard about polyamory, is through
okay.
that website.
Okay, yes, FetLife. I know a lot of people there. Also, tell me, now, right now we're not using your real name, but in your day-to-day life, are you pretty public about having a boyfriend and a girlfriend or another friend? Or, I mean, do people who know you, maybe people you work with, your neighbors, do they know or not?
Most of my family knows. Except for the family members that are truly the judgmental type.
Okay.
And the way I see it is, I'm not going to sit there and let you bash me. I love my family, and I'm always going to love my family. They're always going to be my family.
Sure.
But you know what? What doesn't hurt them is not going to kill them. That's the way, as far as that concerned. And
yeah.
As far as, pretty much everyone I meet, I tell them I have a boyfriend and a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And they ask,
okay.
and I say I'm even in my relationship with my boyfriend is even open as well as my girlfriend. If at some point in time I become attracted to somebody else, or even they become attracted to somebody else, we sit down, communicate what we're feeling, and everyone gets to know everyone. And once everyone is comfortable with everyone, then the possibility opens up to something more happening. If no one person's not comfortable, sorry, not happening.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now, do you live with both of them?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And
you did.
We're the three of us are in a relationship with each other.
Okay. There's so many ways that this is acted upon. Some people are like you. Other people live by themselves and have several lovers who have several lovers who, you know, it just goes on. And it's just that there's a very openness about it. Others, there's maybe five or six people live together. Or it really depends on the people, their circumstances.
And there's, I've even talked to some people who say they're polyamorous who are like the person the cop that you had mentioned earlier, who, even though they're polyamorous, they're in what they consider a closed poly relationship,
yeah.
Where there's more, there's like, say, three people, but yet they go outside once in a while and no one knows anything. Personally, that's not fair to anybody, because the person you're going outside the relationship with, if they end up developing feelings for you, they're the ones that are going to end up getting hurt.
Exactly. If you do that, I mean, if you're in a quote-unquote closed, but step out sometimes, I mean, you don't, the people that you're in the relationship with should know that you're going out. Even if they don't have to know who it is or whatever, they need to know. And the person, like you said, that you're going out with, they really need to know what you're in. Because, it's just isn't kind, and it just goes back to that cheating where people get their feelings hurt. So,
the other concern behind that is also that was my biggest thing was if I don't get to know the person and I don't trust the person, who's to say at some point in time that person is going to catch feelings for, say, my boyfriend, and turn around and trying to do something drastic to where it's only him and that person.
Exactly.
And that I could get physically hurt. And I'm sorry, my personal safety comes above everything else, and my health as well.
Yeah.
If you don't like
That's what you're saying happened to a friend of mine. Well, sort of. Yeah. She was legally married to one person and ham-fasted to another. And both of the men had girlfriends, and the person she was hand-fasted with, it's like, all at once, I mean, it really just, it broke her heart. He and the person he was seeing, they just took off without, you know, saying anything and saying, you know, even saying, well, we've decided we're going to be mono for a while and so we're going to move. They just took off, and it broke her heart because it was, it just seemed, I mean, I don't know how, the best way would have been, though, to at least say something.
Exactly.
You know,
that is a prime example of a poly relationship that did not have communication.
Yeah, yeah, because it got to that point where it's, oh, you know, he still loved her, I guess, but he was going off, and I think the other woman might have had money or something, too, but, you know, whatever. And, yeah, so it was very hurtful. And, I mean, this does not hurt, true. I mean, people in one-on-one relationships, when they split up, people are hurt, too. But we're just saying that you can get hurt in this, and you can get hurt more, like in any relationship, if you're not honest. And
exactly.
Above board. So
and
I think
I'm not gonna lie and say that even that a poly relationship isn't gonna have, especially when it has open communication, isn't gonna have times where there's mistakes made.
Sure.
But it all depends on how the couple involved take those mistakes and learn from them and grow from them.
Exactly. It's a work in progress, right? It's and
exactly.
I think that you grow so much from being in this lifestyle. Do you have children, Allie?
No, I do not.
No. I know that sometimes people think, oh my God, you know, and they've got kids. But I always remember what one of the presenters at a Star Wars festival years ago said, because he had at the time that he tells about. He and two women were living together, and his, you know, child lived there with him. And people, I guess, had been like, well, you know, what do you do with him? What does he think? And he said that the only thing that ever happened, one morning, they were all in bed sleeping late, and the kid came in and said, okay, wake up, who's going to make the pancakes? You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
because
it's normal for a kid. I mean, they don't think anything about it. If you don't make a big deal about it. They
exactly.
Know that, you know, they're loved by all these different people. And, you know, I mean, and it's unfortunate that sometimes still, though, we do have to tell the kids not to talk about if everybody's living together, you may have to tell the kids not to talk about it at school kind of thing. There is some kind of boundary sometimes, and that's unfortunate. But
honestly, I believe that at some point in time, those boundaries are going to end up being gone. Because
I believe that too.
If you stop and think about it, look where we were, say, 10 years ago with two women having a child or two men or surrogates, for that matter, where there's a biological mom and the mom who has adopted them.
Yes.
The child knows no different.
Right.
And it's not hurting the child.
No,
they
want no, they're
people want to say it, they're hurting the child. Yes, there are people out there who do ruin it for the people who legitimately love their children when it's two women or two men who are these pedophiles and all these people that are out to hurt children. But when you have two people who honestly and truly love and care for a child and are supportive of the child and do not do anything to harm the child, there's nothing wrong with it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't make any more sense to say, oh, well, you know, two women are going to abuse the child or two men are going to abuse the child, so we can't let them have. I mean, any more than a couple, a man and a woman, because some of those couples abuse children too. So you
exactly.
can't say, well, we're not going to let them have kids either. You know, yes, people will be people, and we have some fucked up people in the world. But everybody shouldn't have to take the blame and the repercussions for that. So you're saying, I believe you, but how long do you think it'll be before, well, now that was about the children, but just before, you know, your neighbor doesn't gasp or something when they hear that, you know, there's a poly couple next door that has lovers in and out, or they may be invited to a ceremony uniting three or five or four people or something.
I think it's not really, it's not that far off. I think the biggest issue is we have the older generations who are strong on their beliefs, which there's nothing wrong with that. And then you have the younger generations, some of the people who are in their 20s and 30s that are like, you know what, this is no big deal.
Yeah. Who are more looking, you know what, I think there's an in-between. I think that a lot of the really, really older people are pretty much okay with it because they've lived and they've seen and they understand what we're saying, that love is love and you can love more than one person. But I think it depends on, like you were saying earlier, the religious background, maybe more than the age of the people involved.
I mean, I think back to when I told my mom that I was bisexual, and she goes, okay, you're still my daughter, I still love you. You know, yeah. Hey, as long as it's not being thrown in my face, per se, you know, have at it.
Yeah.
Whatever makes you happy.
I think it's funny when people say that, as long as you don't throw it in my face or you don't try to convert me, it's like, well, I'm not going to try to convert my mother. I'm not going to throw it, you know, I mean, they use these phrases. But, Allie, sometime I'd like to have you come back because there's so much to talk about and you're living the life and you're loving it. So I think that's excellent. So will you come back sometime?
Sure.
Okay.
You know how to get hold of me.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're here with Sarit Jacobson, Views the World. Hello, Sarit.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey. Well.
We're a little after seeing them. Craziness.
Well, I know. It's so crazy. But you and an ex-guest of ours have been having a little bit of fun on Facebook in the Israeli groups, I think. Haven't you?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah? Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been trying to share what's happening in Palestine in the Israeli groups. I'm getting some very good reactions and some very bad reactions, but I'm surprised at how much good reactions I'm getting from the Israelis here.
Do you think that it has something to do? Well, I'm sorry, but remember, I mean, just recently now, those 43 reservists refused.
Yes.
To, and I think that might have sort of woke up a few people in Israel because they weren't listening to the refuseniks, but these guys who are all officers have come out and said that they're not going to take part in this. And I think that might have made a difference.
And this is not the first time this kind of thing is happening. We had IDF officers from the Air Force do the same thing after Castlet.
Mm.
One of them was a famous Yonatan Shapira, who was in the flotilla to Gaza, and a famous conscientious objector now.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. If you were in that flotilla, that had to... Well... I mean, that person's life was already changed before the flotilla, but the flotilla probably just finished him off. And for those who don't know, we're talking about 4 years ago, this past May, the Mavi Marmara was boarded and 9 people were murdered by the Israelis. And 60 miles out into the open international waters, and nothing was done to Israel for murdering these people and stealing the ships and taking them all to Israel. It was horrible. So they did die in vain. I mean, a lot has come out of that. But I just saw the other day that the, well, actually, I think yesterday or today, that they're really gung-ho on building more settlements.
Absolutely.
So this, all of these people in Gaza, over 2,000 people being killed, it meant nothing to the Israeli government. I mean, they're still doing, and I've been seeing the pictures of the people on the West Bank in those checkpoints. I mean, it's like they're just herded in there, these metal cages, these that they have them in.
Like,
and you know more about the West Bank than I do, I'm sure. But these people have to get up really early before work because they have to stand in these checkpoints for hours sometimes.
Absolutely. Always. Hours to get anywhere because the average wait in a checkpoint can be 4 or 5 hours easily.
Can you imagine, like, waiting in the morning 4 or 5 hours and going to work?
And it's cold.
And, right, going to work then. And then in the checkpoint again when you're through with work.
And they also have flying checkpoints, so you'll never know where they can pop up.
Right.
We also have to remember that people in the checkpoints are just 18-year-old kids who are sometimes not emotionally developed enough to deal with the situations they come across.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, most 18-year-olds, wherever they live, are not emotionally mature enough to deal with those kind of things. I mean, really, who is? But a kid isn't. That's just, yeah.
I'm glad there's a group of older people called Checkpoint Watch who go and make sure if there's any abuses, they document them and film them. And sometimes I'll share them on Life in Palestine and on my wall.
Okay.
And that's helped. One of our friends goes to Checkpoint Watch. And on her Facebook wall, let's meet in Calandia Checkpoint. And the right-wingers saw her status and shared it on their pages and called to kill her.
They still don't
So now all the Israeli left have made their statuses just for friends because it's become so dangerous to say anything publicly. Because the right-wingers will share it on their pages and send. One day I shared something. I got like 20 threats at once.
Okay. That makes sense.
For men and women, or rape threats. So I can't imagine what Palestinians are going through if Israelis that say, hey, we want you to feel sorry for these people and have compassion, and they treat us so bad for saying it.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing because you're in the U.S. and not that being in the U.S. doesn't make you any safer, but the people who are threatening you mostly anyway are in Israel, and it's not like they're going to jump a plane and come over and do anything to you. And
they're probably not going to. I don't believe they would.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's the coward that makes threats like this anyway, and probably, like so often, half of them aren't using their real names anyway, which is such a cowardly way to do that. But, you know, the thing is, when they threaten then the Palestinians or they threaten the other Israelis, I mean, now that, who knows? Because, I mean, they're right there. And that can make
a difference. Yeah, and here in Nashville, I must say, we have a great police force. It's not like Ferguson here or New York. They're very civil and polite and seem to doing their job as serving and protecting the people here.
That, you know, I mean, that's so good to hear because, oh, God, yeah, so many places that isn't the case. And
I know, it's terrible.
Yeah.
People
used to, you know, be able to think that, yeah, if anything goes wrong, I mean, I'll call the police. And now, it's like, well, do I really want to call them? Do I really want to get them involved? So people have to, you know, they...
Exactly. And some people live secret lives. They are, I know I've met some very nice people who have been addicted to heroin or other drugs, and mm-hmm. I know they wouldn't call the police. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. No.
And I live right next to the police, so I'm kind of glad. I'm right next to them.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of complaints about the police. When I lived in Chicago, I had called them a few times, and they were right on the spot, really nice, took care of everything. They were actually excellent. And, I mean, I know I have no illusions about Chicago cops, but my own personal experiences were really good with them.
That's wonderful.
Well, I have to say, some plainclothes dicks were dicks. When I had first come back and was looking for a place to live and things, but I was in a car, I don't know if I told you, with two of my friends, and they were black guys. We were going to some club, and we got pulled over only because we had a nice car, we're dressed up, and it was two black guys and a white woman. And
yeah, racial...
I mean, what are you going to, you know? But that was the only
affirmative action in some people.
Yeah. Now it's a little different and all that, but it was just like, man, I was so surprised. The guys weren't really all that surprised because, you know, they knew that kind of thing happened. But other than that, no, all my experiences with the police in Chicago were just excellent. No.
That's great. In Palestine, the people are having terrible experience with Israeli police. For example,
oh, yeah.
We have a case the other day of a settler attacking Palestinians, and the Palestinians got arrested.
See? Now, that sounds like something like would happen in Ferguson or something, right? I mean, something that's too convoluted. I know.
Absolutely, for like totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yes. And you know, on the West Coast, it is just so bizarre. I have a friend out there in the Oakland area who's a major activist, and the stories he tells. And you know, we hear once in a while about the well, just like in Ferguson, you know, we hear about the young men that are killed, but. So what is it? Every 28 hours in this country, the police kill someone.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
This friend in California, I mean, he has the stories, and he does the marches with the families, and he just, you know, is trying to, like, get help for the families and all of this. I mean, continually, because these different young men are just being killed. And so often, I mean, it's and nobody's saying that they're all perfect, but the way, you know, when they're shot in the back and they're running and they're shot, or, you know, they have no weapons. And, I mean, I watched one. It was horrible, the video. And, in fact, I had the niece on the show because, I mean, they were trying to get some kind of justice. He was killed in his own front yard. You know, the like the police were down the road, and they followed the pickup into his yard, and he was the passenger, and he got out, and they just shot him. And then they were, like, kicking him, trying to find a weapon, and there was none. And his wife came running out of the house, and they hollered at her and forced her back in the house. And so he just bled out on his lawn. You know, things like that, and you watch that, and then you can imagine the families watching. And in Palestine...
Sounds like Palestine.
The whole family is right there when people are stolen, when they're kidnapped in the middle of the night and everything. It's so traumatic. And when you're kidnapped like that, or your kids, and you don't know, you frequently don't know even what station they're taking them to, and you don't know when you can see them and hold them, because they don't have to charge them with anything, so they just hold them in these Israeli prisons.
Yes, and they get tortured. One of my friends in Israel is doing a campaign to end torture.
I hope that's...
And I've seen...
Yeah.
The torture techniques they use are absolutely horrific.
Well, we know that, because we've been told by, like, the youngsters about the, like, the cattle prod things, the electrical things that they use on them. And, I mean, they use these on kids.
They're dead off.
Yeah.
They put food on the kids' genitals, one kid said, and made the dog eat the food.
Now, can you imagine, talk about traumatic. I mean, that kid, I mean, I know that there's some programs, because you and I have both seen, like, videos of some of these people in Palestine who are trying to work, like, psychologically work with the children. But can you imagine, I don't know what you would do with a youngster who's experienced some of this. How do you ever help them get totally over? I don't think they can get over that kind of trauma.
No, they cannot. And they have special psychiatrists that help them. And I've seen a documentary about it, and I was horrified by the cruelty against children alone. They're just not seen as human.
I mean, but they do have, like you said, I mean, they do have some help. They don't have enough. They don't have it for all the kids and families, but they have some. Yeah. I was very happy to see the other day that Cuba was sending aid to Gaza through Egypt.
News.
I guess. Cuba always comes through trying to do humanitarian things. Just like right now, Cuba is also sending doctors to Northern Africa for the Ebola thingy. The United States is sending soldiers, right? 3,000. Yeah, we're going to send soldiers, and they're going to take care of Ebola. Cuba's sending doctors, medical people, because they actually care about the people. They care about the humans. You know, they're not sending soldiers to guard the property of the oil companies, okay? I mean, you know, it's such a different thing. So I don't know. I was trying to follow. I haven't seen anything from George Galloway for a couple of days, because, you know, he was in a bit of a thing there in England, because he's so against the Zionists. And, I mean, George just stands up and tells it like it is. So I need to check and see what's happening with him. But I don't know.
I heard he's getting a little better. He's in a lot of pain.
Yeah, well, right, because he was attacked. I mean, he was actually physically attacked by some idiot. for saying that Derry or wherever that, I think it was Derry, it's a town, that they were totally boycotting Israel. I mean, that there would be no Israeli products coming in there, and, you know, I mean, totally BDS. And this person took offense at that, I guess. So, but George, it's just like Ken. I mean, I'm surprised that they haven't been heard a lot more than they have, because they're so outspoken.
Yeah. Whenever it happened to a Jewish politician, it would have been everywhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's well.
Such double standard.
It's a whole other world, Sarit, and you know, because you know Israelis, and you know the good ones that are working with us, and you know the others that are working against. So, I do think that this last group of guys, I think that that's making a difference, because while
it
like
is.
You said, others before did, but I think that after this Operation Protective Edge, even a lot of the Israelis were a little tired of this, and when they actually saw and realized what their government was doing, some of them started to wake up.
Absolutely. One in trying to leave the country right now. We have three American politicians that are for moving military aid from Israel.
Well, that's
if
something.
If anyone would like
yeah.
to call them and speak to them, I will share their names on my
yes.
wall.
Do. And then we'll put it on Marte Fio. But yes, encourage them. Anybody who's showing signs of having some sense needs to be encouraged. Because, I mean, that's the only way it's going to happen is if we stop funding them at the rate of $3 million a day. Because that's, you know, what can this country do with $3 million a day toward, I mean, I know that's...
And the money's not helping Israel. It's going to the fascist right wing, which is the same like ISIS in Syria.
I mean, it's not...
America supported ISIS in Syria. Now they're supporting...
people.
The same thing in Israel.
Right, but I mean, it goes to the companies and things. I read the other day that the money that the United States gives to Israel, there's a deal... that the Israelis are supposed to use like 70% of that to buy like the military stuff from U.S. companies or from companies that are partially owned by the U.S. So, no, I mean, we know the money isn't going for your people in Israel who are looking through the garbage dump. I mean, the garbage cans for food, and we know they are there. The money doesn't go to them. Absolutely not. Just like in this country.
They have more... of a, how do you say, chance of burning themselves alive than being a target of any hostile activity by Palestinians.
Well, this is true. Has there been any more people, Israelis, burning themselves alive lately?
As far as I hear, no. There have just been people evacuated from their homes and thrown into the streets because... expensive buildings were being built in their area and they were needed to go.
Ah, okay.
So what they're doing to the Palestinians, they also do to poor Israelis.
Right. I mean, they do that every place.
Of course, they don't use rubber bullets and the tear gas. They just arrest them if they resist.
And I know some people think, oh, rubber bullets, well, I mean, then they get something in their head like that, some kind of toy. It isn't. Rubber bullets are no toys.
They're regular bullets coated in rubber.
Yeah.
So, no,
yeah.
They're no toy. They killed a few people. My friend from Israel lost an eye.
Yeah.
And he's pretty angry. He's been doing great work now. For example, he went to Germany and put a sign that said to save Ghetto Gaza, while the Israeli Minister of Law, Tzipi Livni, was there, and she saw that flag and freaked out and tried to destroy it. That happened about 2 weeks ago.
So
I'm proud of him for getting her wanting to destroy his flag. The press took pictures of her in Israel, and she actually made fun of herself. That was silly.
Well, I
you know
what?
Comments under the picture from Israelis are like, why are you doing vandalism? You're supposed to be minister of law. And really funny. She didn't get much positive comments. Tzipi Livni got, from the Israeli left, maybe 100 hostile comments underneath.
But you have to laugh. And, I mean, if, to survive the whole thing and all, I mean, making fun of herself, good for her.
If you can laugh, don't feel guilty, because it will make you strong.
Yeah.
And we need strong activists. And if you feel weak, take a break. It's okay.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I mean, sometimes
I really think we need to do away with money sometimes. It seems to be causing a lot of wars and a lot of poverty and hunger and destroying the planet, but I know it's not very realistic.
Well, I think it will happen, I do think, but it's not going to happen until people have some kind of a spiritual awakening and really get it. And when just your regular people, like us and the people we know, decide they've had enough and they understand that power is actually in our hands. I mean, we can do something against these corporations and governments, but we have to unite.
Absolutely. In Tennessee, we have a couple of farms like that where people can go and live off the land.
Mm-hmm.
One is where Code Pink came from, Summertown, and the other one is called Shut Up and Grow It, where anyone is welcome. They have a website, and they live off the land.
Yeah, there's a lot of eco-villages, but now you're talking about like the one that Stephen and, what was her name, Ina, the Gascon people, started years and years and years ago. They've got hundreds and hundreds of people. But there's smaller eco-villages all around, and around the world, not just U.S. I would be in one now if I found the right vegan one, because I think that's not like an all-time answer, but that's a good answer for now. And people are going to learn from these how to do it on a larger scale, which is what we need. So I think it's going to happen. So while I'm very optimistic,
if we survive global warming,
I'm very optimistic about Palestine, because more people are waking up, and so that makes me more optimistic about a lot of the places in the world. I just think that humans are waking up a bit. Not that it's
Tom Combs has compared the attack on Gaza to shooting fish in a barrel.
I really like. You like what he said?
Yeah, Noam Chomsky, he said that IDF was shooting fish in a barrel in Gaza for 50 days.
That's what they were doing.
And we're worried about what's going to happen next.
Yes, yeah, so sometimes, now I like Noam Chomsky, and we've had him on the show and everything. I don't agree with everything he says. I mean, I'm not like Brian or Pinko, who, you know, I mean, they practically bow down and everything he does. But I think for a lot of things, no, he's right on the money. He really has
to say. Yeah, I agree with you. I think when two people think exactly alike, somebody's not thinking.
Right, somebody's not thinking, or somebody is, not thinking, or telling a little lie or something, trying to make nice, I don't know. Sarit, our time is up.
Yeah.
We will see
it
you.
Is. Okay.
Next. We will see you a week from today. And have a happy equinox, because it will be officially autumn when we're back on here.
So, okay.
Yeah, how about that?
Getting cold.
So enjoy it in Tennessee. Yeah.
There.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
We're back with Bigfoot with Rick Schmidt. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Ruth Ann. How are you tonight?
I am great. And I've been looking forward to hearing about the tall man, Sasquatch.
Tall man. Well,
so, yes.
I've researched a lot of... There were some stories I didn't get to the last time I'd like to touch base on, if that's cool.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Because I think these are some of the ones that were local, because we ran pretty short towards the end. But have you ever heard of Momo?
Momo?
Momo, Missouri Monster, 1971.
Yeah, Momo. Just
Louisiana, Missouri. Yeah, it's a wonderful campfire story for little kids. Momo smells like 1,000 dead skunks and eats dogs.
1,000 dead skunks.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this was an interesting story. It happened, around Hannibal and Louisiana, Missouri. And I drive through that area quite often, and I think about that. And I've seen interviews with some of the people that witnessed this. And this went on for a couple weeks with the sighting of this creature running around and up and down the streets. And he's behind the church now, and the townspeople are up in arms with guns chasing this thing through town.
Huh. Always chasing, I'm sure. Was it supposed to be just one that was in the whole area?
It was one in the area. There were some prints found, but the prints looked like somebody put on a rubber glove and stuck three fingers in the ground.
Okay, one of those, yeah.
So the prints looked like a hoax, but I've seen interviews with the witnesses, and this one woman in particular is very compelling. She saw what she saw, and she knows it was real.
And she saw it in town?
Yeah.
Oh, in town. Wow.
In town. And really, actually, in-town sightings of Sasquatch are not uncommon.
I did not know that.
Especially in areas like Montana, Washington. If you live like in the outskirts of town, they've been seen rummaging through dumpsters. Squatches rummage through dumpsters. Yes.
Sure. That makes sense. And you're talking about like maybe wooded areas, Montana, Washington, things like
that. Right. We're talking about places like Washington State. But there was a sighting of Bigfoot in very close to East St. Louis, Illinois.
Oh. Well, now you're talking
about
here.
Down by the racetrack.
Oh, by a racetrack.
Not far from where I live.
Wow. Well, and that's not exactly major woods.
It's very urban.
Yeah.
I drove by the site where...
Do you believe that?
We have the mounds in Illinois, Cahokia Mounds.
Right.
Well,
right.
Modern men, we're mounds builders to this day. We build mounds of garbage. And there's a mound of garbage down there in East St. Louis that's right by the old racetrack. And That's where the sighting was.
And that's not like a really a wooded area or anything?
No, the thing that would, I think that would attract it is on the Mississippi River bottom.
Okay.
And one of the sayings is they always follow the creeks or the rivers.
Right.
And any time you have a major river bottom, they travel it, and they're nocturnal. You're not going to see them most of the time.
Right.
So it doesn't surprise me that, but it's very urban down through there. And there were also sightings up on Route 3 closer to Grafton. But Grafton, you can almost believe it because it's getting way more rural up there.
Okay.
Very country, but it's also part of the river bottom.
So that's like a double incentive or a double lure.
Yeah, if you got rural areas and, you know, places where there's got to be a good food source, and most of Illinois is pretty good for that. You know, there's deer and corn and.
Well, that's it. Are they meat eaters or plant eaters?
The thought today is they are meat eaters, or
okay.
They are omnivorous.
Okay, that's probably more like it. Yeah.
And the question's often been, well, how could, you know, there's not enough food in these areas to support an animal of that size. Well, grizzly bears survive.
Right.
Grizzly bears are omnivorous. Grizzly bears eat berries, mushrooms, ground squirrels, and carrion.
So that shouldn't be, yeah. This one that was seen in town, the woman who you give her a lot of credibility.
Yeah.
Did she talk about the size of this one?
This one, see, when you're talking about size, she was saying this was 6.5 foot tall. Okay, that is another red flag. When you're talking about something that's not out of the realm of human size.
Yes.
But it was smelled very bad and was seen carrying dead dogs around. You know, that's not something a human would really do.
Although, I mean, okay, 6'5", smells bad.
That's a good size man. It's a good size human being. That's taller than me.
Yeah, but that part just, I mean, that sounds like it could be a homeless, like a street person who was just a little wacky.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Well, let me just relate an interesting little story. I was driving up through there along the Quiver River.
This is near Hannibal?
This is on the way to Hannibal. I was driving by Troy, Missouri, which crosses over the Quiver River, which was where one of the rivers that was mentioned in the story that the creature was seen in. And I saw something walking along the river with a funny limp and walking, and I thought, oh, my gosh, is that a creature? And I got up, and it was a homeless guy walking along the road.
Ah.
You know, sometimes your mind can take off and
exactly.
You know.
and especially when you're primed, it's like, okay, something was seen around here, and.
Right.
Yeah.
And every time I drive through that area, because I go up and down through there quite often, because I'm going up to a town called Cahokia, which is up and close to Iowa, and I drive through Louisiana every chance I get, and it's a very small town, population probably maybe 300 or 400 people.
Oh wow! Okay, that's tiny. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't even have a Walmart.
Thank God. Good for them, Rick.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's still goes along with the rural thing. I mean, even though it is a town, it's still small.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing, you know, I've often joked that, yeah, realistically, the idea that I'm going to see a Squatch in my hometown is very remote, but it's connected by the Richland Creek, runs to the Kaskaskia River bottom, which runs to the Mississippi River bottom. And if you follow the directions, oh, they always follow the creeks, there could be sightings in areas close to where I live.
Yeah, but probably, yeah, I would doubt very much if in the town you live in, if you were to, or like
yeah,
in your
I
back.
Yeah, I think it's highly unlikely.
Yeah.
But I have seen eagles flying down Richland Creek in the wintertime.
But that,
so
that's
you think you're away from the wild. You're not. You're never really that far from the wild.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's the funny part. You know, I mean, like in Chicago, it doesn't take that long to get out in to the woods, you
right.
know, or out in the fields and the water. I mean, wherever we are now, yeah, it doesn't, because of our transportation, it doesn't take that long to be in, maybe not crazy wild, but into the rural areas.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember last winter my son was saying he never saw it, but his friends kept telling him there was a snowy owl hanging out down by the lake.
Oh.
And they lived four blocks from the lake. And he went down there looking for the snowy owl. He never saw it, but all kind of people were coming back and saying, oh, we saw a snowy owl down by the lake.
Yeah, okay, I'll believe that.
And like you say, like I'm saying, you're never really that far from the wild.
That's right. And probably more so now because we have infringed so much. That's why, like, we have coyotes coming through town and things.
Right.
Because we've infringed on their land so much.
And we don't stop.
Yeah.
We're not making no effort of stopping or slowing down.
No, because greed, consumerism, people with the attitude they can't do anything about it, so they're just going to kick back
and for some reason, it's easier to destroy a wilderness and build a Walmart than it is to take a old Walmart, tear it down, and rebuild on the old Walmart site.
Yeah. It's amazing. No, it is. I mean, no, that's capitalism in its prime. Where did the term Sasquatch come from, Rick?
All right, Sasquatch is a term from a southwestern Canadian Indian tribe.
Southwestern Canadian?
British Columbia.
British Columbia,
exactly.
Okay.
Is where the term Sasquatch comes from. And I'll talk about the Native Americans for a while.
Okay.
Native American thought, Sasquatch has always been part of their lore. And in Native American thought, you know, the animals are our teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And because Bigfoot is like part man, part animal, kind of like... you know, like the goat gods from ancient Greece.
All right, right.
And the satyrs, and those part beast, part humans, they saw Bigfoot as being kind of like that.
Okay.
Or has the knowledge of the animals, and has the knowledge of the humans.
Did they have any stories of how he came to be?
No, it kind of always was. There's a lot of stories about them having battles with Indian tribes.
Oh.
And in some of the legends I've found, they're pretty much talked of as another tribe. These are the hairy people.
Oh.
That live up in this area or up this river. Or they call them the stick people. Because they throw sticks and beat sticks onto, or tree knocking is a common phenomenon that people listen for when they're out squatching. They're looking for squatch evidence. They'll listen for, they'll knock on trees and see if they'll get an answer back. Now, in the Native American tribes of the West, Bigfoot is pretty much just another animal. But when you get further east, like the with the Sioux and the Lakota Sioux and the tribes of Kansas and Nebraska, they are animal and spirit being together. And if you see a squatch, some of the tribes will actually say that's a sign of some kind of message, convey a message from the spirits. Oh, I saw a squatch. Either this tribe's doing something wrong, or something's going on, or it's like seeing a white fawn.
And okay.
The Indians would say that's a sign, or you see the white buffalo, that's a sign.
Now, so then that's interesting. Do I have this right? The far west, the tribes just thought it was another animal.
It's an animal.
And then
I've read this more than once, you know, where and you get into the east, that's where you get into the more spiritual nature of Bigfoots. Now, Lakota Sioux called them the Chai Tatanka, which literally means elder brother.
Ah.
Think about that one.
What?
In eastern Canada, they were referred to as the Rougarou. Sounding very familiar as the Loup-Garou, or the werewolf-type beings. We've talked about this before. There is a connection.
Okay.
This is more like in French, the Quebec area, French Canadians.
Right.
The Rougarou and the Loup-Garou area. Then there's the Wendigo, which is a sinister cannibal giant.
A sinister cannibal what?
Giant.
Giant. Oh.
Yes. The Wendigo is the sinister cannibal giant that I'm not sure how they got to be that way, but that's just one of the legends I had ran into. Let's see. The Iroquois.
Go ahead.
You got a question? Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask if these that you're naming from the, you know, the different tribes, the different names they had. Now, these guys all looked similar.
Large, hairy, man-like creatures is the general description.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Large, hairy.
But there is.
But large, now we're not talking maybe 10 or 12 feet.
Depends on where you're at. I've heard of reports of 12-footers being seen in northern Wisconsin. No, I mean Minnesota.
Oh.
Northern Minnesota, they get big.
Okay, let me ask 12-footers. You.
12-footers.
Do you think that the story of Babe and the Blue Ox did, would there be any connection there?
I mean, of the giants?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that's a tall tale, and a lot of people put what I'm talking about in the same category as tall tales.
Well, I wasn't thinking
I'm not sure if there's a connection
about.
between...
Right, what you're talking about is not Tall Tales, but I'm thinking Babe in the Blue Ox was, but I mean somebody made the story up. So I was wondering if the big ox, the big thing, if this had been sort of a takeoff from a Sasquatch.
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Okay.
But there has been talk of who is the guy that fell asleep for 20 years and woke up?
Rip Van Winkle?
Rip Van Winkle.
Yeah.
Woke up with a bunch of little people.
Yeah.
In the East. And there is a lot of reports of what they would call little feet. Hairy, man-like, small creatures.
Oh, how small?
In the 2 to 3 foot range.
Oh. In the East, you say?
In the East.
In the East of the United States?
Eastern United States.
Ah, I never heard of the small people. I mean, I've heard of the little, you know.
Well,
very,
now I'm fixing to burst your bubble. If you go down, there was reports of little people down south, hairy, man-like creatures.
Hmm.
They're monkeys.
Okay. Loose, wild? We have wild monkeys? Okay.
Wild monkeys are in Mexico.
Oh, well, right. Okay.
Yucatan.
But in the east of this country?
No. Well, see, that's where they become cryptozoological beings, because there are no known native monkeys of North America.
Right.
But there have been reports of them for years.
Hmm. Yeah, I had never heard of the little short small ones in the eastern part of this country. That's interesting.
It's interesting. Oh, let's see, what else do I got here? Oh, this is a very interesting thing. A lot of the tribes believe that, if you see a Squatch, it's a sign. We talked about that. But you're not going to see one unless they pretty much want you to want to be seen.
Okay.
Are you following me?
Yeah.
You're like, they choose who they want to see, who they want to be seen by.
Unless maybe like that one that was loping around that town. I mean, I would assume that sometimes if they're in pain or they may have a little derangement going on, they may.
Yeah, I've often thought that about Momo. He was elderly, kind of sickly, maybe.
A little Alzheimer's hitting in or something.
Not in his right mind.
Yeah, because what you're saying is like they only appear to certain people. I get that. So if you see one that everybody's seen, there may be something wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
And like I said, that the reports of the Momo story, is almost like, let's get the torches and pitchforks and let's go chase this creature.
That is
pretty much what was going on in that town.
Idiots. Absolute idiots. I people amaze me sometimes, not in a good way. I don't know, you would get some people who are experts in this, or you would get some kind of the animal control people or something. I mean, at the very least, you get somebody with a what do you?
Yeah,
you know,
I don't know what you would really do. I don't know.
Well, you might knock them out. I mean, you get a vet with do you call it, like a dart gun thingy.
Right.
If you want to capture, you do that. You don't go out with pitchforks. People are just too fucking stupid sometimes. And then they were feeling like big men. Yeah, we're going to go get him.
Now, I had just read a story online a while ago, just before I came on, and it was a very interesting story, and it had to do with Native Americans. It was wrote by a woman who was part Native American, part white, and she lived in Montana, and her father lived on a reservation. And she had said, and I think this is very interesting, that he had an inherited memory of Bigfoot, because before he was born, he remembers being in the waiting room before he was born, and there was a lot of spirits sitting all around him, which were the spirits getting ready to be born. And one of them was the hairy man.
Ah!
And I found this. This was a good read. And
as he
got older, the hairy man, you know, had been born into the area, and there were sightings of this hairy man rummaging through dumpsters, like I'd talked about, and had got very familiar with one of the families on the reservation. But this is like the dirty little secret of Native Americans. They just don't talk about it.
Well, now that's
interesting.
They
know a lot more than they're telling.
But now that was cool, because then it would have been born right around the same time he was. Okay. He would have
in the story that was
kinship.
Told.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was sort of a kinship, but then it kind of went bad when one of the local Native Americans was kidnapped by the hairy man, and a bunch of them went out and shot the hairy man, and they have a bunch of guilt and remorse over killing one.
So, did they get pictures or anything?
No.
No.
They never do. Even though I have seen photographs of dead squatches a couple of times, they're hard to find online.
Yeah, I don't know
if they're faked or not. That stuff would be so easy to fake.
I would think that somebody who actually had the real thing, some of them might be leery of posting it because they would think the people would think, but that it was some kind of a scam. Even if
often wondered what I would do if I really had the goods. Say I'm driving along the road early in the morning, heading out on a fishing trip or something, and I came across a roadkill Bigfoot. What do you do?
What do you do?
I don't know.
Lots of pictures. Okay, lots.
I would
of pictures.
Document it. I'd photograph it, and I would try to get. I'd try to get DNA evidence.
If you
happen to run across a young one that you could bag up and freeze, bag it up and freeze it, and then try to get in touch with, if you go calling the cops about something like this, and then Men in Black show up.
You don't
want to,
there's nothing left. Like you said, if it's a young enough one, a small enough one that you could bag it and freeze it, the other I definitely would. We've only got 60 seconds left, Rick.
I enjoyed this time together.
I know.
I'll let you know if I'm going to be able to do one next week. You know, I got my surgery coming up on Tuesday.
You've got surgery,
Tuesday.
But we may be able to this. We may tape a couple ahead. So we'll try to figure that one out. So thank you so much. I look forward to this because it's very cool. Things going on in this country, and then I know sometimes you're going to talk about the big-footed creatures in others.
Right.
So
we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
I know that, yeah. So it's all good. So you have a wonderful equinox. You're going to be in the hospital for equinox. We will talk soon. Thank you, Rick.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.